Hi guys, this is Nick Elliott and this is show number two on the Nick Elliott podcast series. And I'm once again joined by my very good friend, Chris Smith. Hi Chris.
Good afternoon. Hello.
How you been?
Very good, thank you. I'm not too bad. How are you?
Not too bad. Bit fed up with the weather, if I'm honest.
Yes, here's hoping for a few weeks of shooting, and then it's going to be nice weather.
Yeah,
really. Well, hoping
a bit fucking warmer would be a good thing.
Well, that would be handy.
Just don't do the cold. How you been? How's your week been?
Yeah, it's been okay. Yeah, it's always a bit of a struggle with life, but as you play the game of that, but it's been all right. Yeah, coping.
Yeah, good week.
Yeah, it's been okay. Yeah, can't complain. What about you?
Yeah, it's not been too bad. Been a bit bitty week, really. This week. Few bits of bobs on and clearing up some stuff. I'm in the process of launching the first of five books that I'm going to do this year. So I've been getting the images together for that, the collections. I've had the forward done. So it's now just a matter of compiling everything, putting it together and getting the design layout done and then off to the printer.
And what's your first book going to be about?
It's called Dark Side of My Mind. Which is, that's the first part of the Lost project that I've been working on for the past 6 years. Mm-hmm. That's the first part of the project that will be a book, although there will be books from other parts of the project. I know that all sounds a bit bloody complicated, but it does make sense and it will do visually when they're out. But I'm releasing the Earl Slick book this year. Which is a rockumentary, because I spent 5 years with Earl. Over that period, we compiled a fantastic collection of images of the legend that is Earl Slick. And there's a couple of other things that I'm doing this year, just actually bringing some of these projects to life, which have been there for the past 6 years. But I'm going to make them a reality. So
this year?
Yeah, that'll be this year. There'll be five books released this year. That's the plan. So that's what I've been doing this week, really. I know time's ticking away for us both, isn't it? Towards
it's already March.
Yeah, I know. Next weekend, isn't it? Next week.
Yeah.
I think it's next weekend. I don't know when it is. Something like that. But we're moving closer to the next shoot period. On the film Buying Time, which is what Chris has been working on recently, which is how we met. Tell us a bit about Buying Time, Chris. What is that and what's your involvement in it? How did it all come about?
Well, as Nick said before, it's called Buying Time. It's a, without trying to overcomplicate things, it's a hypothetical dystopian future film. Set not too far in the distant future. It was about a man who's lost his family due to unsuspicious circumstances in the hospitals, and he's wondering why there's a significant increase of deaths, a suspicious death that's been going around in the country or the world, and he tries to investigate this corrupt corporation and bring it down. That's me trying to explain the story. This is written by Andy Blythe, who I partnered up with. It's his baby, it's his concept, and I'm helping him lift it off the ground as the director. He approached me about it on the last day of the last film that we shot together, which was called New Year's Eve. And he came on board to help me as a DOP on it. And he literally said, I've got this idea. It's what I've just explained to you, and would you want to do it? And I just said, yeah, I'd love to work with you again. Let's make it again. But then all of a sudden, like a couple of weeks later, they said, right, let's do it. Let's make the schedule. Let's shoot in Norwich. I'll come down to Norwich and we'll get all these actors on board. And I thought, bloody hell, he means it. He's serious. And that just kind of fell in my lap, but in a good way. It felt like a nice blessing, really. And he said, can we shoot these scenes in your house or your flat? And I was like, yeah. And then loads of people have been coming in and the crew come in, and that's kind of how we all met and formed together, really.
How did you meet Andy?
Oh, many years, actually. Andy was a background artist in one of my films.
Right.
Before, that's how I was aware of him. Knew of him as an actor who was like on the agency websites.
Yep.
Then years came about when he started making his own films, like documentaries and his own like web series and stuff like that, which, you know, I'm glad that he was doing stuff like that, and our paths crossed, and he said, I then mentioned him. I thought his camera work was really good on one of the other films he made, and approached him for shooting New Year's Eve, which was our first collaborative project together.
What was New Year's Eve?
It's a short film.
Yeah.
It's now on YouTube at the minute, but hopefully trying to get into various streaming platforms. It's a crime short film. All takes place on New Year's Eve. It's about a boy who meets this girl online through a dating app, and they go for a date on New Year's Eve. But one of them is catfishing and is not saying who they're meant to be saying, if that right. makes sense. Then one of them is a culprit, because there's been some murders that's been going around. People getting killed on New Year's Eve, and the police are trying to chase this killer who's been going around killing people on New Year's
Eve. Is this your film? Is this your concept? Did you write it? Or
Well, it was written by someone in America.
Okay.
I adapted it and said, I'd love to make it, but only if it's set in England. And he said, yes. So I came on board as a script writer and changed some stuff around and to make it adaptable for a UK type of setting, which the writer, Anthony, was very, very... he trusted me to do that, and I was very grateful. And it's just this half an hour short film that was once adapted as American script, but now turned out to be a British film.
Pleased with it, was you?
Well, I think with every film I make, there's usually some faults. I always see some pros and cons with some films I'm in charge of or willing to make. There are some flaws in it. There's some things I wish could have been done better, but there's some things I'm really happy with.
Right.
But yeah, we're just trying to get it on platforms at the minute. But that was mine and Andy's first film. Pitched it to me on the last day of New Year's Eve, buying time. So yeah, sure. And then it just came on board and he said, will you direct it? And I thought, yeah, no problem. So it came on my lap. Didn't think it was going to be a project that was going to happen. It just has. So,
Are you pleased with where things are going with buying time?
Yeah, I am. It's ambitious. I kind of swore myself not to make another low budget feature film. But... yeah, I'm very pleased with how it's turned out. We've got a really good crew, even though it's a skeleton crew. You know, really pleased with how the footage is looking, and we're all working really well as a team. And we've only come down all together like four times to shoot this, and then there'll be another 2 weeks of shooting, and then we've got ourselves a feature already covered.
Yeah.
Yeah, I couldn't be more happy with how it's gone. It's just all about connecting. It's how the people who you know, do you know what
yeah.
I mean?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
After Buying Time, we don't know what we're going to make, but because I've met all these very interesting people who are involved in Buying Time, they've also, well, I've got this idea, and you know, I've got this, what we do next. I think Andy's interested in doing a sequel to Buying Time.
He spoke to me that he got something else in the frame,
yeah.
And he pretty much wanted to move relatively quickly on it. He said to me that, you know, he wanted to do another one.
He did, yeah, and which I'm all for, it's fine. No problem, but I think we've got these other projects on the go that part of me thinks maybe we could do something a bit more refreshing first,
yeah.
Then dive back into Buying Time 2 if we're right, doing something like that. But at the minute, I don't know. We obviously need to keep certain actors in touch because if they're coming back,
yeah.
For example. But I don't know what's on the pipeline at the minute between me and Andy, but we're hoping that there'll be another project straight after Buying Time.
Right.
Straight away.
Well, I know we're going to get started at some point on Short Days, Long Shadows, aren't we, this year?
Oh, it's the film I'm dying to make straight away. It'll sounds be good. Amazing when you talk about it.
It'll be good. It will. Yeah, it's going to be... I think it's very strange because I don't actually write nothing down. It's all in my head. And I spoke to Andy a couple of weeks ago about it, and I said I've already shot first 20 minutes of it in my head.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I could see exactly the scenes, everything.
Did you do a photo shoot with Andy for the film, haven't you?
Yeah, there'll be a project of stills that, again, will end up in a fine art coffee table book titled Short Days, Long Shadows. We started on that, I think it was the second week after New Year. And we shot some really nice stuff. The only thing is, I wanted to do a lot of it in the rain, and it didn't want to rain that night, which was a bit of a bark.
Especially that it rained on Buying Time all the time.
Yeah,
like, literally,
yeah.
It was one of the most annoying shoots ever because it's just been raining whenever we were outside.
I love shit in the rain.
Yeah,
there's something really atmospheric about the whole thing.
But it's hard to capture raindrops.
It is. Yeah, it is. But this particular night, I mean, we got some stunning stuff. I'm really pleased with the stuff. But it's only the start of what I want to do. What I'm going to do is literally, in fact, the whole concept of the film as a move-in film is based around the stills.
Yeah.
So I've already got the stills in my head and those concepts, and then the move-in will come on the back of that.
Have you mentioned, have you spoken about this film on your podcast
before? No, not at all. No, it's we haven't actually kind of officially released it that this thing's going to be done. But it is this year. It's something that I've wanted to do since I was about 13, 14, probably even sooner than that, really. And again, like I said, you know, on the previous show, it's shot in the film noir style. So it's all going to be black and white. There's no colour. Don't do colour. So it's all black and white, very sinister, very seductive, very sexy, very me, really.
I can imagine those two words going well together, you and sexy, so...
Well, it's if you look at the kind of stuff that I do now, still-wise, and just move it over into a moving film, that's what you're looking at.
Yeah.
So it's going to be raw as fuck, you know, dark and...
sex, drugs and rock and roll in a film noir type, really.
It is, yeah, it is. There is a bit of that. In fact, there's quite a bit of that. That's where the film is set, the 70s. Which is a period, you know, which for me was the dominating period of my life. It's when things really happened. There's no doubt people say that about the 60s, but for me it was the 70s. Musically, the best period ever, in my view. When rock and roll was really what it was all about. You know, there was attitude, there was people that got things to say, the Pistols, etc., etc., you know, strikes, British Leyland, etc., etc., where people went just fucked off with what was going on. And they did something about it, you know, rather than kind of occasionally mentioning it on a Twitter post, which is now what goes on, or X, as they like to call it now. What the hell is that about? I do not know.
I miss Twitter. But you don't get many films... 70s films that are like black and white as well.
Or no.
That's meant to be set in the 70s, but black and white.
Yeah, it is my style. That's what it is. And it's another kind of... it's an expression. That's what it is, Chris. But it's going to move this time instead of it just being stills. It's going to move, you know. There's going to be a little bit of kind of dialogue in it. Not that much, but I'll leave that bit for closer to the time, because that's going to be a bit special. But you're going to be working on that, aren't you?
I'd love to. Yeah, absolutely. I'm hoping that might even be the next project we do after Buying Time. I believe Andy's he's the script writer, or he's adapting it into a screenplay. There'll obviously be a lot of work that needs to be done on it to make it look 70s, because it's hard when you make a film to set it in a certain time.
Yep.
Because you can't have this film be made where there's obvious stuff that are modern that might be crept up and shot.
Yeah.
One of my first films I made a film set in the Second World War, and there was a book behind this actor that literally said 1918.
Really?
Whatever, yeah. And I thought, unbelievable. It was literally like a replica. Well, it is a real World War II classroom. Or, you know, set in the 40s and all that.
So, yeah.
The typical, like, wooden desks.
Oh, fantastic.
That. But there was a book on there that said the 80s. And I was like,
really?
And nobody spotted it. And it was just one of those things. And even though we thought, right, we can get away with this room to make it look 40s, we missed that bit out.
But. Talking about that, I don't know whether you've ever seen, I think it's Cleopatra, the film Cleopatra.
No, I don't think I have, no.
And I remember, for some strange reason, when I was at school... yeah, it is, yeah. Old Dickie Burton.
Yes.
Plays Tony. And I remember, for some strange reason, at Stangrand School, they used to kind of allow you to watch a film instead of having a class, a lesson.
A lesson, yeah.
And you watch this film. Scott of the Antarctic was one I remember, and Cleopatra was another one. And I remember there's a scene where a guy is walking around with a Rolex watch on in Cleopatra.
No.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, there is. Yeah, there is.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's also similar to Gladiator.
Yeah.
If you've ever seen Gladiator. Yeah. There's this infamous goof where a crew member is seen wearing a t-shirt and jeans.
Really?
In this crowd, yeah. I think it is actually the Colosseum scenes.
Is it really?
Yeah, yeah. and it's like, again, one of those multi-million dollar budget films. But they, you know, couldn't hire that. Do you know what I mean? They couldn't get that right. So I think you always get these mistakes all the time. So you can't avoid stuff like that. Right?
Just talking about that, where do you stand on Carry On films?
I admire them. I think they're very good. I really love, what's the one, Carry On Screaming?
Yeah.
I think that's my favourite one.
Yeah.
But I'm not a diehard fan of the Carry On films.
Right.
Why do you ask?
Just because it was such a big part of my kind of youth.
Oh,
it
yeah.
It really
yeah.
was. And I love all the kind of double entendres, the innuendos and all that stuff. Just fantastic.
Yeah. Man.
Absolutely brilliant. Brilliant.
Shame they don't do stuff like that anymore.
Oh, I can still watch them today.
Yeah.
Still watch them today and laugh. It's really good. But you couldn't even have them on kind of mainstream TV because of the innuendos and the PC vibe on it. But I just wondered where you stood on Carry-Ons.
No, I admire them. I think they're very good films, very good comedies, but they're not films that I know the lines off by heart or something like that.
No.
No, I don't mind them, yeah.
I always thought the names of the characters were absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, definitely.
They were really, really over the top. They were, dear, oh dear.
They're fantastic. Your favourite films, are they?
Well, Carry On Camping would be my favourite.
Yeah.
But no, I just look at Carry On Cleo, brilliant. Screaming, good, but I weren't that much of a fan, apart from Dan the Lavatory Man, who I loved. I mean, fantastic name. But no, I can still watch them today, man. They were that bad. And funnily enough, I was lucky enough to work with one of the actresses. I did a cameo on a charity Christmas single music video and worked with one of the ladies from that time. And she was in three Carry On films. Do you know, I can't remember a damn name. Jesus, it's gone. It's just gone.
Right, so it's from this music video shoot.
Yeah, and she was on it. She was also playing a character in the film. And we ended up spending no end of time just talking about Carry On films.
I bet that.
Yeah. And the people, you know, that she'd worked with, Sid James, Barbara Windsor, all them kind of people.
Of course, Barbara Windsor,
yeah. Fantastic, man. Brilliant. Yeah, Bernard Breslaw, all these legendary comedy actors.
Yeah.
Just wonderful. And it was really great. It was a bit of a thrill, actually.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. Yeah, to...
Had to pinch yourself.
To meet her. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, she was really nice. Really nice.
Do you get starstruck easily? Or?
No, don't bother me, man. Not really. Mm. No, I've had there's been occasions when I met Robert Plant. That was a bit of a special gig.
Yeah.
And The Quo, that was another bit of a special gig. And a band called Supertramp. Don't know if you know anything of Supertramp. They were one of my all-time favourite bands. I think that they were very underrated at the time, and I think they were in that category of Pink Floyd, without a shadow of a doubt, yeah. Creatively and conceptually, I think. And I worked on their reunion tour in 2001.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Which was absolutely marvellous, and got a tour T-shirt given to me by the band, which was a bit mean. I've got loads of them given to me by the band, but the Supertramp shirt really did. You know, it was one of those times where you think, "Fuck me, this is hot."
Yeah,
this is hot. Really good. Talking about that, I'm going to throw something totally in here, which is definitely bowling you a bit of a googly. How do you feel about Hilda Ogden?
How do I feel about her?
Yeah, would it be Hilda Ogden or Auntie Wainwright in Last of the Summer Wine?
It'll be Hilda.
Would it?
Yeah.
Why?
I'm not entirely sure where I'm going down that. Or...
Is it the char lady thing? Have you got a thing about char ladies? Is that what you got?
Quite possibly.
Yeah?
Yeah, yeah. What about you?
I think it might be Auntie Wainwright for me.
Oh, okay. Why's
yeah. Because she was always trying to rob you.
Okay.
You know, which it was just... Although I'm a big fan of Summer Wine, I don't find it mega funny, but there are a lot of funny bits in it, and the characters were just absolutely brilliant. And obviously, a lot of listeners will know that was played by an actress called Jean Alexandra, who died, I think, a couple of years ago, something like that. But I just thought I'd throw that in. You know, it's like one of them things.
Anyone who's a fan of Jean Alexandra will...
Yeah, or Hilda Ogden, Coronation Strata.
Their ears have pricked up as we speak.
Yeah,
so yeah,
totally. It's like, you know, did you ever fancy Bugs Bunny when he dressed up like a girl?
No, I was more of a Jessica Rabbit type
of guy.
Yeah.
I've asked that question before some guests, and they always say Jessica Rabbit.
Yeah, it's bizarre that, yeah.
What was it about Jessica Rabbit?
She's curvy.
Really?
Yeah, it was the curves.
Yeah, curvy women?
Yeah, definitely.
Gets my vote. Totally.
Yeah.
Totally. Anyway, I just thought I'd throw that in.
Why not?
Yeah. And see how you felt about it.
So that was mine and Nick's top... that was our top one favourite rabbit of all time.
It was, yeah. Yeah, definitely.
On the podcast.
Yeah, definitely. It had to be brought to the show in some way, shape and form.
Do you have a childhood crush? Or did you have a childhood crush?
I'm not a kind of crush guy, but it would actually be Diana Rigg.
Okay. Right.
From the Avengers.
Ah, yes.
Mrs. Peel.
See, I know her from Game of Thrones, but I have to acknowledge her when she was...
Oh, okay.
Back in the day. Obviously, she's an elderly lady in Game of Thrones, but then...
Yeah.
Obviously, I know she was a stunner back in the day.
Yeah. And Honor Blackman, it was also in...
Goldfinger?
She was Goldfinger.
Yeah.
Pussy Galore.
That's the one.
And, but she was the original... First Lady in the Avengers, Kathy Gale. She played the character Kathy Gale.
Yes, she was, yes.
But that would be it. But I've never really done Crush's Kiss. Have you?
I have crushes all the time.
Do you really?
Yeah. I had a crush when I first saw you today.
I can understand that.
That's that. And
You're not the first one to say it.
I've got your poster in my room anyway. So. But crushes all the time. Yeah, I'm a sucker for crushes. Yeah, I have crushes all the time.
Tell us about them.
I don't know why.
What's your latest one?
My latest one. Well, I told you, it's you.
Oh, okay, yeah. Right.
But I don't know if someone's very pretty walks about and I'm just like, oh, yeah, that's that. But my childhood crushes, I loved people like Kelly Brook.
Okay.
Model.
Yeah.
One of my favourite... actress who I love is Halle Berry. I just think she's one of the most beautiful people ever.
She was in the Flintstones, weren't she?
She was.
Yeah.
I forgot. See, I can't watch any film with her in it.
Really?
Just because she's that gorgeous. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
I just feel weird, like a little like schoolboy who's got a crush on someone. So, yeah.
How did you feel about her brother, Chuck?
Chuck?
Berry.
I didn't realise dad jokes were going to be thrown into this.
No,
podcast.
That was bad. It just come to me. I thought
it was bad. I didn't even get it.
No, it was desperately bad. Moving on.
Yeah, let's move on from that dad joke.
So what is it with crushes? Is it just something that you know you do?
I guess so. I guess it's weird speaking to someone who doesn't have crushes.
No, never did. No,
so what
never
do you
did.
Do then when you feel for somebody?
Tell them.
You just tell, yeah. But you've
but
got
obviously
to have
Halle Berry, you're going to struggle, wouldn't you?
I would, yeah. Wouldn't get English out of my head. That's no, but yeah, you must have a crush then to speak to them.
No, not really. Oh. I just kind of compliment people. I think you know, I'm a big believer in saying what you feel. You know, like I don't know if you see somebody with a mean pair of shoes, yeah. Good shoes, I'd buy them.
Yeah.
You know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And I do that a lot. People, not very well accepted in the UK, that isn't really, I don't think, compliments. We don't compliment each other enough.
No, I agree. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Always quick to have a dig.
Yeah.
But not so quick to actually say something positive and plus to people.
Yeah. Well, I know our listeners not going to be able to see this, but can I just say you look absolutely terrific today.
Oh, thank you, man.
There we go.
Thank you.
Yeah. See?
Thank you. I'm still, unfortunately, needing to protect myself against the stupid weather, which is a bit of a gas. So I am looking forward to when it warms up a bit and you can kind of take a lot more fabric off.
Yeah.
You know? So anyway, where are you kind of at the minute with the film, Buying Time?
We are 2/3 into production, so we wrap everything up in March. It'll be our hardest shoot. We've got a fortnight, basically, of... Well, it's more of a week, really, actually. And it's just nothing but insane scenes, very ambitious, big, complicated scenes to shoot. But I reckon we could pull it off. It's just going to be a bit trickier than usual.
Not wanting to kind of stab into the storyline, but there's a gunfight scene, isn't there, in it, towards the end of
yeah,
it?
Yeah, towards the end.
It sounds quite exciting.
It does sound exciting. It'll be the most ambitious thing I've ever done, but... Because usually you see a lot of action films these days that rely so much on post-production.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And
that's a nonsense.
It never really works, in my opinion. You know, practical gunfights need to... I loved back in the day where they used, like, squibs in gunfights. So they actually had some sort of, like... Apparently a technique would be to wear a filled condom filled with fake blood.
Oh, really?
Attached to a string on someone's chest. And
okay.
When it pulls out... It squirts, literally,
right.
Like a squib, basically. I wish we could do something like that, but we need more makeup.
Well, we spoke of your favourite film, Private Ryan, earlier on, which
yes.
I think is, well, for me, one of the best action scenes ever shot.
Oh, the first 20 the minutes beach. Or half an hour.
On the sand.
It's all half an hour, I think,
yeah.
That one fight. And it's just, yeah, that blew me away, that bit. Scarred me to some extent just because of how graphic it
oh,
was.
Oh, yeah. It's wonderful, isn't it? Audible.
Yeah.
I mean, the sounds and that, the shells whistling by and all that, gunfire and that, it's seriously good. But, I mean, the production on it is cosmic, isn't it? It really is.
Yeah,
it is. Really is.
But
guys losing limbs and fuck knows what. And
yeah, they got actual amputees as well to be
did back they then. Really?
Yeah, yeah. The people who are literally looking for their limbs... already had no limbs.
Really?
Yeah, yeah.
I didn't know that.
No, yeah. I think there's quite a few of them that were on board for it.
No,
which
was
remarkable,
fantastic
really.
Scene,
yeah.
Mate. It's a fantastic scene. But...
Can't imagine the health and safety of getting all these extras on the beach.
Well, I mean...
Hiding in the tides.
It's so real, isn't it, that is? It's so real. And like you say about CGI and post-production and all that kind of stuff, you know, I think that particular scene, anyway, was shot... as they used to make films, didn't they? It was down to set building, makeup, you know, angles, lighting, and all that kind of stuff.
What you see is real, basically.
Yeah, totally, totally.
And I tell you, years ago, I saw Pirates of the Caribbean 3, right? And
yeah.
It's slightly random, but I'll get there in a sec. But I went to the cinema, watched Pirates of the Caribbean at World's End, forgot what year it was, walked out, felt like I didn't watch a film.
Right.
Reason wise, because it was just, I felt like it was 100% behind a green screen the entire time. And
right.
I was, like, what I was watching wasn't even real half the time.
I think they're rubbish.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
All of them.
I'm watching it going, what am I even seeing half the time? I'm not even impressed. If you do everything in post, then you have all the time in the world.
Pixel? Who
what
make
Pixar?
That's it. Who make these? And is that not Disney? Disney involved
yeah,
in that, or own the bastard
it, yeah.
things. But I've never been a Disney fan. Don't like Disney films.
What?
No.
Even as a child?
No. No, never keen.
Well.
Never keen. Same story. Two kids running away from somebody who's trying to get them. You know, lose a couple of animals and all that kind of stuff, and then come back at the end.
That's the sad part, of course, yeah.
Enter stage left. Bambi.
Or parent dying. There's usually a parent
dying.
Oh,
yeah. There's usually that kind of stuff, yeah.
To represent that life moves on
yeah,
and stuff.
Yeah,
yeah
it's all a nonsense. I've never been a fan.
I found Bambi to be too depressing. Even as a child, I was like, nah, I can't keep watching it.
That was sad as a bastard,
it is,
it?
Yeah.
Terrible. Absolutely terrible.
If
Dumbo,
someone,
some poor old elephant with big
Dumbo's
ears.
Quite depressing, actually.
You know?
I don't even like Dumbo just because of that.
No.
If someone said, could we put Bambi or Dumbo on? I'd be like, are you insane? Like, just because of how depressing they are.
Yeah, mind you, I think the stars of Dumbo, though, are the crows sitting on the fence.
Oh, aren't they meant to be the Bee Gees? Not Bee Gees, the Beatles.
That's it.
That's it.
It was based on them. Yeah, yeah, yeah. But that's the best bit in it for me. But no, I was never a Disney fan. Not at all. Never. Not even as a child. Cartoons and that, yeah, great. But no, weren't bothered about Disney.
It's a shame that Disney's taken over the world right now, then.
Apparently they are, aren't they?
Well, they bought everything.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you'll always see a Disney copyright logo on nearly anything that you like now.
Because what did they got? They got something that was pretty good, weren't they? Was it the Sex Pistols documentary? Disney, you got that?
I think, yes.
They made a documentary about the Pistols, which I know caused a lot of trouble with Glenn Matlock. I know Glenn Matlock because he worked with Earl Slick on a lot of the tours that they did over here. And Glenn was very anti that, big time. Where Lydon was, I think, behind it big time. Never met Phil Lydon, but I know it caused a bit of internal issues, I think, between guys. Yeah, it did. But it's supposed to be very good. But I think Disney have got that, which I don't subscribe to, so I can't watch it.
No.
Which is a bit of a bark.
Yeah, I bet it is.
But I know it did cause quite a inside of the band issues.
Yeah.
Mm.
So what childhood stuff did you like when you were...
What did I like? Thunderbirds. I was a massive...
Oh, you were a Thunderbirds fan?
Man. Thunderbirds changed me and my brother's life.
Did you like the bit where it was an extreme close-up of a real human finger?
Yeah.
And then you're like, why... Yeah,
I was only talking to somebody a couple of days ago about that, and people couldn't understand why they cut to a human hand. But yeah, obviously, you know, the puppet's hand didn't move. But in saying that, I'll tell you a little story now. Thunderbirds had such a massive impression on me and my brother's life. It was unbelievable. And we now live in a time that Gerry Anderson saw and predicted way, way back in the 60s. Where, you know, you could do a video call.
Oh, right, yeah.
You could actually talk to somebody thousands of miles away without any cables and what have you.
Mm.
And all that kind of stuff. And he predicted it. Thunderbirds, Tracy Island was that. But one of my highlights was I used to do a show on Siren FM in Lincoln. I did it for 5 years, Sound and X Vision it was called. And it was basically an hour of talking nonsense, playing tracks that had been a massive influence on me and why I do what I do. And, excuse me. And then I was asked to guest in on a show that was hosted by a guy called Alex Lefchuk on Siren called The Midweek Drive. And he used to have all these various different celebrities and stars, film stars, phone in from all over the world. And this particular night, he had, goodness me, I'm trying to remember the guy's name. What was the guy's name? Anyway, he was the voice of Scott Tracy.
Okay.
Scott Tracy. Forgive me, I can't remember his name. I would do before we actually finish it.
And you're a Thunderbird fan as well.
I was a Thunderbird fan.
Yeah.
And... oh dear.
It came back into fashion when I was a kid. I remember there was this huge wave of Thunderbirds. When I was at school, there was a point where everybody was collecting the models and the toys and all that. And I just thought, isn't this the thing from the 60s? But it did have a second wave for another generation.
Yeah,
which was
it
my
did.
Lot.
Yeah, well, they made a really bad feature film, didn't they?
Yeah, but I don't think it was. Yeah, I don't think it was probably famous. Yeah, I think it was something to do with that wave then. I don't know if there was just somehow rehashed and everybody loved it again.
Shane Rimmer, that was the guy. That was the guy's name.
Well done.
And he phoned in on this show and I actually spoke to the voice of Scott Tracy.
And you didn't get starstruck?
No, but it was just one of the... Well, I did a little bit.
You should have.
But it was for Scott Tracy, not necessarily Shane Rimmer.
Okay.
And then I've got a bit of ET that my PA had done for me. She went to one of these sci-fi con things, and it was all the Thunderbirds and Gerry Anderson, and Shane was there.
Ah.
And he did a bit of personal VT for me, signed pictures and Scott Tracy. And,
yeah.
Oh, man, they're in my treasure box. Fantastic.
We were... Captain Scarlet fan as well? Or?
I liked a bit of Scarlet, yeah. One Man Freighted Made Indestructible.
Yeah, and there was a Stingray as well.
Yeah, Stingray. I was a Stingray fan. I was a fan of all of them, really. All of them. I just think they were fantastic. Absolutely brilliant.
Ah, so Puppets was the key to your heart.
Thunderbirds. Thunderbirds, yeah. Well, like I say, all the Gerry Anderson stuff, but not necessarily Puppets per se.
Okay.
But definitely Gerry Anderson. Yeah. Yeah, it was must-see TV.
Lots of explosions and that.
Yeah, show, yeah. But it was cinematography, videography, photography, as it should be, created, you know, through the camera, through the art of lighting and set building, which all those are crafts and arts in their own right.
Yeah.
In their own right. You know, I don't go into this green screen nonsense. Not at all.
Were you a fan of Team America when it came out?
I don't know that.
No?
No.
The people who did South Park were Trey Parker and Matt Stone. It was 2004. They literally did a film very similar to the way they made a Thunderbirds episode.
Right, no, never seen it. No, never seen it.
Okay, well, that's another film I'd recommend to you.
I mean, I still watch Thunderbirds now. I've got them all. And I still watch them.
It's literally like a Thunderbirds film, so to speak, but a lot more X-rated.
Oh, okay.
There's even a sex scene between the puppets.
Oh, really?
Yeah, but funny. Okay,
now.
Not in a weird... Well, it is
I don't
weird,
know how weird I'd like that.
It's a good comedy.
Two wooden people getting it on.
Yeah.
No, I don't know.
There's no genitalia or anything in
that. No. It just kind of destroys the whole imagination
I think that's
thing.
Kind of
the joke. Do you know what I mean?
Doing, yeah.
You know?
They wondered how they conceive and this how...
It's like, I won't watch programmes where you see animals getting it on.
Oh,
I can't be doing with that.
No.
No. Destroys all the romantic side of it for me, you know, and the loving thing of animals and how you
Well,
look
I wouldn't particularly
animals.
Like it if someone filmed me while I was getting the job done.
No, probably not.
I don't think anybody
you
would like
probably
to.
Probably make a foo bob, though.
Could, if as long as the other person knew.
Yeah.
But...
Yeah.
Just randomly.
If it
filmed.
Turned out to be a kiss and tell.
Yeah. If it was from my window, for example.
Yeah. Yeah. From your window. Are you doing it in front of the window?
Well, doing it in front of the window and someone's like filming the window. It could be, you know, I didn't ask their permission.
Okay. So you got a bit of a thing about window sex, yeah?
No, not really, no.
Okay.
That's the voyeuristic side talking, yeah.
We're just talking bollocks now, really. No sense at all. Well, Chris, it's been absolutely wonderful. We've had a fantastic day, and the shows are absolutely brilliant, man. I'm so, so pleased that you managed to come on, you could find the time, and we could get this together. And I'm looking forward to early part of March when we're going to be back together working on the film set. So I really want to thank you for coming on, man. I really do. Thanks ever so much for your time. It's been a true pleasure.
Thank you, Nick, for having me. It's great speaking to you today. I couldn't think of anything better to do my Sunday with, basically.
Wonderful. Yeah. And also, we've had carrot cake.
We did. Yes, I gave Nick some carrot cake for the podcast.
Check it out, listeners. He bought carrot cake. I mean, that is what it takes to get onto this show.
Well, it's just a way to your heart, really.
Yeah, yeah, indeed. Yeah. Way to my fart. Anyway, Chris, you stay safe, and I look forward to seeing you in March, my friend. Love you lots.
Lovely to see you.
Take care, man. Catch you soon, listeners, and I hope you enjoyed the show.